Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
2007, a year with plenty of heroes and anti-heroes, from the monks in Burma protesting dictatorship to Louis Libby convicted of perjury in the CIA leak case, take your pick, to Benazir Bhutto and her assassins. Later this morning, we will have another call-in for Pakistani Americans today, and today we will ask, who's the next Benazir Bhutto? Who takes her place as leader of the Pakistan People's Party? And should the January 8th elections take place as scheduled? But let's begin this morning on the positive side by asking, who are your neighborhood heroes of 2007? Daily News columnist Errol Lewis featured six civic heroes of New York in a recent column. Errol joins us now along with two of the New Yorkers he singled out for working tirelessly to improve neighborhood life. They are Omar Freya, founder of the Green Worker Cooperatives in the Bronx, and Melvin Blackman, creator of the Urban Drug Recovery Program in Brooklyn. So, Errol, welcome back, and Omar and Melvin, welcome to WNYC. Good morning.
Good morning.
Errol, give us the big picture before we meet our guests, who we got through you. What did you look for in your column called Pass the Praise, Please?
Well, you know, what it was, I have a column that runs on Thursdays, and that includes Thanksgiving. So here comes Thanksgiving, and I figured what I would do this year, I did it to a certain extent last year as well, was kind of something I'd seen a friend and mentor, the late Jack Newfield, do with his column, which was around Thanksgiving time, cite some of the activists who don't necessarily pop up as household names, who are doing really good things to make the city better. And this year, I had an abundance, actually. I had to figure out who not to include. And I looked really just at people who, you know, some are better known, some are not so well known, but I wanted to cite people who I think are doing really interesting, innovative things that, for one reason or another, I had not gotten around to writing about in the course of the year.
And since you articulated the category so well, let me just use that to set up an invitation to our listeners to call in with your neighborhood heroes of 2007. Whether you are in New York or New Jersey or Connecticut or wherever you happen to be, who is somebody who maybe is well known around your parts, but not that well known citywide or region-wide or nationwide, who you think deserves a shout-out as we come to the end of 2007. This is on the positive side for an end-of-the-year call-in right now on your neighborhood heroes of 2007. Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, and let's meet Omar Freya. He is widely regarded by community and greater New York City activists as kind of a rising star, a civic leader in urban environmentalism and environmental justice. He is a recipient recently of one of the Rockefeller Foundation's inaugural Jane Jacobs Award this past summer. He's 34 years old, grew up in the South Bronx. And Omar, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having me on the show. And Errol, thanks for the shout out.
Oh, of course. No problem.
So you grew up in the South Bronx, but left for college and graduate school. Where did you go?
I went to Morehouse College for undergraduate and then Miami University in Ohio for a graduate degree in environmental science.
And what brought you back?
A love of home. A love of home and a strong desire to come back home and work for the benefit of the community that raised me.
So you come from a background in what has come to be known as environmental justice. Talk about that concept a little bit and how it applies to the Bronx.
Sure. Well, everyone wants justice, and when we talk about environmental justice, we being those of us who are from community-based organizations, community struggles around the country and around the world, the idea is very simply that those who get the burdens often share the same traits, and they are communities that have less power. And in this country, that means people of color and poor and working class people. And so when we talk about justice and environmental justice, it's simply saying that we want the benefits instead of the burdens going to wealthier communities and whiter communities. We want the burdens being distributed along with the benefits equally across the board.
You don't want just the power plants and the bus depots,
right,
and the transfer stations.
We want the green trees and the clean air and the nice places to play and the good working schools and homes that don't kill you.
And so your group is called Green Workers Cooperatives?
Green Worker Cooperatives, yes, because we are also about creating jobs and creating work that actually empowers people and really looking at the economy that we're a part of and saying we can create the kind of work that we want that doesn't kill us and do so by having the workers actually be the owner. So we actually take it a step further and deal with the economic background, the economic ramifications. So we are an incubator for worker-owned businesses that are also green. And we just launched our very first worker cooperative just 2 weeks ago. We just moved into an 18,000-square-foot warehouse. It's called Rebuilder Source. And you can imagine a Home Depot. This is a Home Depot for used stuff. So we looked around at the problems in the South Bronx, and a major one was waste, what to do with construction and demolition debris. And so we decided that we would create a store where people can bring, and we would accept all the doors, hardwood flooring, sinks, bathtubs, windows, stuff that normally gets thrown out whenever anyone's doing a renovation job.
What a great concept. And this isn't just for contractors. This is for homeowners. Renters who want to improve their home.
Exactly.
So where is this used Home Depot?
it's in the South Bronx. It's on 100. It's right by Southern Boulevard and 145th Street. And the telephone number for anyone who has some great stuff in their house that they've been holding on to, or developers, is 718-742-1111.
718-742-1111 for this kind of used stuff Home Depot in the South Bronx. That is a really good resource for a lot of people who can't afford new stuff, right, but who still want to fix up their homes.
Exactly.
So, Melvin Blackman, you work with the Urban Drug Recovery Program. What is that?
Well, Urban Drug Recovery is actually, that's the title of my website. I'm an addiction counselor. I'm a former substance abuser. I've been clean for going on 22 years. And bottom line, I used to be part of the problem. And what I'm trying to do is try to help other people become part of the solution and move on. First of all, I want to thank you for having me on the show. And Errol, thanks again.
Oh, sure. Good morning.
For surprising me with that article.
Yeah, I failed to warn any of these folks that I was going to be praising them, but I figured it would be a nice surprise.
They just woke up on Thanksgiving Day and found themselves in the Daily News.
That's it.
There you go.
No, did your phone start ringing off the hook? While
actually, it was through email, I found out, you know, and as soon as I caught up with Errol, I said, you know, thank you for being sneaky, but it's okay.
I said, leave me alone. I'm trying to cook a turkey.
Right.
So, Urban Drug Recovery Program.
Yeah, Urban Drug Recovery is, like I said, it's that's the name of my website, urbandrugrecovery.com. But I just put that in there because it's part of the drug problem is part of a big problem, a big part of the problem in the urban black community. And what I try to do through the website is I have a book out called the name of my book is Urban Suicide, The Enemy We Choose Not to See. And my book shows the people in the urban black community the part that we play in the condition of the neighborhood. I also have a prison program that's about, it's been in the production stage. I've done some stuff at Lincoln Correctional up here in the city. And it's in the process of possibly being a statewide program. I call it the Burning House Program. I just want to deflect to what Omar, who I just met today, was talking about. What he was talking about is like exactly what I'm talking about. I'm trying to help empower our own people to do things for ourselves, because too much attention is paid on the negative part of the urban black and Hispanic community. And not enough stuff is done. Like what he was talking about is like empowering ourselves to do things instead of waiting for somebody to come and do it for us. You know,
Yeah, and you describe your program as being focused primarily on the children of formerly incarcerated and addicted persons, more focused on the children than the addicts or the prisoners themselves.
Right. Right, that's comes under the heading of my prison-based program, which is called the Burning House Program. what that program is about is the fact that the reason I call it the Burning House Program is because the crimes that people in the urban black and Hispanic community perpetrate against each other, the way it affects the kids. If a person does somebody, commits any sort of crime, whether it's drug dealing, shooting, or any kind of crime against one another, and gets caught for, I consider those crimes starting the fire. But when they get caught for starting the fire and get sent away for years, my question is, what about your two-year-old? Because, like, you started the fire and you left your child in that fire. So what are you going to do once you come out? Because we all make mistakes. God knows I know that. You know, I've made tons of them. But the whole idea is trying to focus on what are you going to do to change the environment and the climate of the violent nature of the urban black community. And so your children stop getting shot, because if you pick up the papers, anytime you look around, somebody's child is getting shot. And that's not a good thing. It's almost a regular occurrence.
Era Lewis, Daily News columnist, let me bring you back in here. These are two of the six people who you chose to focus in that column, singing the praises of selected New York activists this year. You want to talk about, from your perspective, why you chose Omar, why you chose Melvin? What's the impact of Melvin's work, for example, as you see it?
I think of Melvin and I have been having conversations for months, probably a year now, and I got a copy of his book pretty early on. I write quite a lot about issues of violence from a cultural and a public safety standpoint, starting with my own neighborhood of Crown Heights, but talking about other parts of the city as well. And he belongs to a tradition that I think is not lost but lagging, of people willing to sort of stand up and just in the most blunt possible terms tell people in the neighborhood that they are both part of the problem and part of the solution. I mean, nobody these days that I can find is really talking on a regular basis to the families of prisoners in that style, or to the children of currently and formerly incarcerated, or talking to people who have been through addiction in those kind of blunt terms. And there need to be a lot more people like that. I'm lifting him up as somebody who is helping to refocus the dialogue in a way that it has to take place. It just has to. It's not enough to talk about this as if it were a social work problem or an economic job and jobs crisis. I mean, it's all of that for sure. But there's also just some very real kind of personal responsibility issues. Neighborhoods have to make up their own minds that they're going to save themselves.
Errol, do you think that because of the nature of polarized politics today, that we're in kind of an either-or box on that kind of thing that we need to get out of? People either emphasize personal responsibility and are blind to the social root causes of things, or they emphasize social responsibility and let individuals off the hook.
Oh, exactly right. In fact, to a great extent, I think my column kind of operates in the space between those, because any rational person knows that it's both. You know, that you can't help a family or a person if everything in the neighborhood is working against them, from education to public safety to addiction issues. But we also all know, I think, that people have to make up their minds to stand up and do their very best. You know, we know that people can make mistakes and we know that people can fail, but the important thing is that you try. I think, but if you talk about political debate, you know, the blanket of cowardice that gets thrown over all of these things, I think, makes it impossible to go very far in any direction, because people will, politicians in particular, will say whatever it is that's going to get them elected. And more often than not, when it comes to these very thorny questions about environmental justice, or about addiction, or about public safety, the safest thing to do is nothing. And the typical politician will say as close to nothing as he or she can get away with.
We'll continue in a minute with Daily News columnist Era Lewis, Omar Freya, founder of the Green Worker Cooperatives in the Bronx, Melvin Blackman, creator of the Urban Drug Recovery Program, and we'll also be joined by a third urban activist who Errol singled out for praise this year, and we'll take your phone calls. Who are your neighborhood heroes of 2007? Get in line with those right now, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Your shout out for your neighborhood heroes from anywhere in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, 212-433-WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and check out our new podcast, Digesting Politics. Here's the deal. From now through Super Duper Tuesday, WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein and I are sitting down over lunch once a week and talking about the campaign. Digesting Politics is a web-only feature that you won't hear on the radio. Sign up for the Digesting Politics podcast for free at WNYC.org. Click on Vote 2008. We are talking with Daily News columnist Errol Lewis and three of the people who he singled out actually in a Thanksgiving column, but we thought it would be appropriate for this last Friday of the year, singing the praises of some of the activists around New York City who are a bit known in their neighborhoods, not that much known to a broader community, but deserving of wider recognition. So along with Errol today, we have Omar Freyer, founder of the Green Worker Cooperatives in the Bronx. He was describing his new store that his group helped set up, kind of a Home Depot for used stuff on Southern Boulevard. Melvin Blackman, creator of the Urban Drug Recovery Program, and also with us now, one of the other six activists who Errol singled out, Agnes Rivera from a group that represents people in public housing called Community Voices Heard. And Agnes, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you for having me.
You were here in August when Errol was actually guest hosting the show for me in one of the segments that we did this year on public housing. And talk a little bit about your work. How did you come to work on public housing issues? What motivated you? What need did you see that drew you into this work?
Well, I was actually frustrated of what was going on in public housing. And there's an organization, a grassroots organization, called Community Voices Heard, and it's located on 116th Street. And they were doing the electoral, where they go door knocking to let you know about your rights and also what's going on in public housing. So they wanted to see what the community was aware of. And when the young man, David Dodge, knocked on my door, I kind of steamed off on him, and he wasn't really the person to steam off on. But I welcomed him into my home, and he told me exactly what was going on and let me know that the issues that I had in concern are the same issues that many others are having. So I got involved with the organization, and it's pretty good. It's an organization that educates the community, trains community how to be the voice of the community. It actually makes us more active in our own communities.
So now you go around and knock on other residents' doors and they steam off on you?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. But my goal is that we could get many more members and leaders so that they can start to see exactly what the truth is going on in public housing and how to become a voice, not just for themselves, but for everyone, because that's what I am. I'm not a voice of my own. I'm a voice for many.
You live in the Wagner Houses in East Harlem, correct?
Yes, I do.
And I gather that by dint of this being a voice for many that you're trying to be, you've been up in Albany a few times this year lobbying on a public housing related bill.
Yes, we have.
What are you looking for from Elliot Spitzer and his pals in the state legislature?
Oh, boy. Actually, for him to start seeing exactly the importance and the need that we have to refund and reinstate the funding that New York City housing is not getting, and it's to reestablish the amount of their responsibility towards public housing, because it's going to affect everybody. These gentlemen here representing probably some of the people that are in public housing or trying to get into public housing. So that need is there from our new elected governor.
Let's take some phone calls, because people are calling up from all over town wanting to cite their local heroes, their neighborhood heroes of 2007. Let's hear some of them, and then we'll talk about what you three perhaps have in common, even though you work in really very different aspects of city life. Jacqueline on Staten Island, you're on WNYC. Thanks a lot for calling.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call.
Who's your neighborhood hero?
Well, I am actually a columnist, too, for a Belgian newspaper based in New York City.
What's it called?
It's called De Morgen, which means the morning. And my Christmas column was about, I think, my hero of the year, but there were so many. But in this case, I picked Ellen Baxter. And she's a New York woman, and she went to my country in the late 70s to study 75 families in a town called Yale, where since the Middle Ages, families take in mental patients, and the patients usually stay till the end of their lives. And Ellen was very inspired by that, and she came back to New York, and she, she had a lot of problems introducing the idea with the city, but eventually she just got started, and now she has already 6 buildings where she provides housing for former mental patients for about 400 people. 100 of them are actually children of the patients. She's working on a 7th building in Harlem, and she's I think, an outstanding person.
That's a really wonderful story, and great that it involves the multi-generational aspect of that housing that probably helps keep some of those families together.
Absolutely. That's as a child of, a mental patient myself, it's really something, to see how she just, does all this work, for the tiniest babies that are just, being able to stay with their mothers as much as possible.
Era Lewis, it sounds like you were having a reaction to that.
Yeah, I was looking for a pen, actually, making a note to myself. I mean,
there's a future column here, and maybe a future segment for the show too.
You're exactly for all of us. I mean, these are the kind of folks who are going to save the city, and that's why I think, we need to have those of us with some ability to put the word out to just do it as much and as often as possible.
Jacqueline, to
thank these folks.
And Jacqueline, thank you very much. That's a moving story. And Marie in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Marie.
Hi. I'd like to celebrate Sue Sussman, who's the head of our tenants association. We're a former Mitchell-Lama building, and that is in dispute as to whether or not we're going to get thousands of dollars, namely market rate rent increase. Sue is a distinguished lawyer, brilliant writer, and she's been politically active with all sorts of Mitchell-Lama and housing organizations. Our building is like Noah's Ark, except everybody in it is Noah. They're the teachers, the legal aid lawyers, they're stage managers, EMS workers, prison guards.
And two by two, they're going to be floated out into
waters
of market housing in New York?
South Africa, where you have to commute for 3 hours to take care of somebody's children or something.
Now, Agnes, we heard you say that you know of Sue Sussman. So is there a relationship, Agnes, as you see it, between the issues that people in public housing face and the issues of the more middle-class people in Mitchell-Lama housing?
Yeah, there is. Actually, we're going to be the first ones to be attacked because we're low income, and then comes the middle income, which will be the Mitchell-Lama. And if we stand together and fight together and build our people and numbers to show that we're not going to give up and that we're going to fight for our homes and our communities, so then if we could unite in that way, then we really have a great action and a great lobby day if we could do that. And I know that we can do that because we did it not too long ago at 14th Street and trying to help that situation out. And we went on to try and let them know that that was the wrong thing, and then to come and find out that my dentist lived there and he had to move out because his rent increase was absolutely outrageous.
So good luck to you, Marie. Thank you for calling. And Barbara in Queens, you're on WNYC. Who's your neighborhood hero of 2007?
My neighborhood hero is Frederick J. Kress, Brian. I wish you all a happy new year, too.
Thank you. You too.
Many years ago.
Who is he?
Pardon me?
Yeah, who's Frederick J. Kress?
He's a young man who many years ago started the Cornucopia Society, which was a food pantry. He then got involved and started the Queens Coalition for Parks and Green Spaces. And then he started another group called CAGE, C-A-G-E, which is Citizens Against Graffiti Everywhere. He's got groups all over the place working very hard to clean parks, eliminate graffiti, not only in Queens, but in other parts of the city, too.
Barbara, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much. And Omar Freya, as an environmental activist in your neighborhood in the South Bronx, it really takes people to step up and look at life beyond their own interests, right? You are somebody who could be doing other things. You went to college. You went to graduate school. This is not going to be the most lucrative work you could possibly do, but somehow there are some people, relatively few in the world, unfortunately, who kind of look at the bigger picture and say, I have to do something that's a little outside of myself.
I think that's the case for everyone. You know, all of us that are here and that were named in Errol's article is that I think we have a, like many others, we have a passion, people who have a passion for bringing beauty out of things that other people consider to be ugly and bringing out the potential. And we have that potential in our communities to make them more beautiful places to be and places to work.
So what do you think you three have in common? And Omar has, I think, just articulated some of it. But you work in very different areas of life with the environment in the South Bronx. In Omar's case, quality of life in public housing. In Agnes's case, working with former prisoners and their children. In Melvin's case, what do you think you all share? Melvin, you thinking about it?
We're just, I think I can speak for my other guests, right? We're just regular people. You know, see, the people in the urban black community and the Hispanic community, right, we sell ourselves too short, you know, because we're smart people, you know, we're intelligent people, we're loving people, but a lot of our own people don't buy into that. You know, they don't think that they can succeed and do the stuff that we're doing. We're just regular folks. You know, it's a each one, teach one type of thing. Like when one person, like they say, it takes a village to raise a child. You know, I mean, that's the whole concept that I go by. We all have the same thing in common, like Omar was saying. You know, it's a passion we can all do because it's in all of us to change, you know, the environment.
And Agnes?
Well, I believe a lot of people have been instilled and feared what they can do and not do, and they've pushed more the issue of what they cannot do. And actually, they can do it because you have a voice and you have a right to speak up and you have a right to lobby. You have a right to go to your senator. You have a right. And if we get back on that route and on those grounds, then we could be very, very successful if we could educate the people and see that they have that ability and not to fear, because fear is the most dangerous thing that we have in ourselves. And if we fear that, then we will never win what we're trying to succeed on. And basically in my area is just maintaining our community, maintaining families together, having our homes stayed there. I've learned a lot by moving into the community that I've lived in for now for nearly 20 years, and it's been fabulous. It's been very educating for my children. It's been educating for me, and it gave me grassroots, roots that I had missed a long time ago.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC, with three of the urban heroes singled out by Daily News columnist Errol Lewis in his Thanksgiving column. Errol is also with us. And our other guests, Omar Freya, founder of the Green Worker Cooperatives in the Bronx, Melvin Blackman, creator of the Urban Drug Recovery Program, and Agnes Rivera of the public housing group Community Voices Heard. And we'll have time for a couple more of your neighborhood heroes of 2007. Harry in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Harry.
Hi, Brian. First of all, I'm a case manager, work with people with HIV and AIDS. And I like to single out all the people working community-based organization that works with people with HIV and AIDS who continue going in service and advocate and trying to have their life that some of people doesn't really think about, just to advocate and keep them alive and to be there for them when there's nobody else is there.
And that's another kind of activism, I guess. Rather than political work, that's really one-on-one activism with individuals.
Pretty much. And the Village Care in New York do an exceptional job in Brooklyn and all over the city of New York. And I also like to single out Errol Lewis for his insight and analysis of what's going on in the community and his way of putting it out in the picture. I look forward every week to read his column, and I wish other columnists could be like Errol Lewis.
Thank you.
Errol, a reader.
Yeah, satisfied customer. Thank you very much.
Andrea in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Andrea.
Hi, how are you?
Good, and you?
Good, good.
Who are you thinking about?
Well, I think Melvin Blackman is an asset to the community of Harlem and ARC. And also my bishop, Gaylord, James Gaylord from Harlem Church of God in Christ. I'm pretty satisfied with them. They're both my heroes.
What does your bishop do? What makes him a hero?
Well, he, both with Melvin, they well, he collaborates with ARC, which is an addicts rehabilitation center, and he really tries to institute a mindset of, you know, that God can save you no matter what, you know, and you're important enough that, you know, you need God in your life. You're important to him. You know, all those other people may have thrown you away. You're still somebody, you know. And, you know, that's basically what I believe.
And that's a lot if somebody can do that for you. Andrea, thanks a lot. Coming up in 5 minutes, we will talk to the former president of Boston University, John Silber, controversial guy when he held that post, once also ran for governor of Massachusetts, and he has a new book slamming what he calls Architecture of the Absurd, including some here in New York. So John Silber on Architecture of the Absurd coming up in 5 minutes. But I wonder if any of the three of you have a question for any of the others. After having, I don't want to put you on the spot, but having listened to each other, anybody curious about anything that one of the others is doing? Or Errol, if you, I know you've interviewed all these people before, but any follow-ups come to mind for you as you're sitting around and listening? I think we may have a shy group here in terms of asking questions.
I'll tell you, there is a trend that some foundations are encouraging, and I certainly try to encourage it whenever I can, of getting people to get out of what are called silos, sort of public policy silos, where people will think to themselves that, well, I work with addiction, or I work with housing, or I work with environmental justice, and not see all of the obvious connection. Now, the connections to me are obvious because if you wander through the neighborhood, you see all of the different things, and you can certainly see how they interact. It's asking probably way too much of any one person to try and master all of the different things that are going on. But what I see happening more and more, and again, you know, it's something you just want to encourage, for people to cross-train one another, to learn from one another about what's going on. And when it works, that's what you can start to call a social movement. And that's what I think a lot of us believe would do more to transform these neighborhoods than anything else.
And you know what? We're going to make that the last word, unless there's something. Oh, Omar, you want to jump in with something. Go ahead.
Well, since you asked what about a question, I was wondering, you know, for both Melvin and for Agnes, you know, our work at Green Worker Cooperatives is about creating jobs that empower while also addressing an environmental problem. And that's what Rebuild Resource is about. And I do want to give the number to the Rebuild Resource before the show is over. But I wanted to hear just from, you know, the other two, Melvin and Agnes, about the needs of people that you're dealing with, whether they're recovering from an addiction or in public housing, about work, you know, and creating the opportunities. What are the opportunities for people, you know, to get out of the situation that they're in?
Go ahead.
I want to thank you, Andrew, for calling in. I know Andrew, and the person that I work for, his name is James Allen. He runs this place called ARC, and he started like 50 years ago. And he's just a regular guy, even though we always don't see eye to eye, and he does the same thing that we do. But while you mentioned about the job thing, see, part of my job at ARC as a counselor is to help find people jobs. You know, so I was going to get with you after the program, find out, like, well, how do I plug in with you? You know, because I didn't want to take up the airtime just to, because we could talk about this for a long time. But that's how it works. You know, anybody listening, that's how it works. Each one teach one. Each one plug into the other one, you know. And that's how things work. And stop, you know, harping on all the negative stuff. Let's get going with the positive stuff.
Well, I will give you my number, and I want to put it also out in the air. If you call us and join with us and all, then a lot of doors do open up. Trust me, a lot of doors do open up.
All right, and we are just about out of time now, so go ahead and give that phone number that you want.
Well, this is Community Voices number, and we'll be open January 7th. It's 212-860-6001, and you could ask for Shannon, Henry, or Sandra, and we'll be happy to help you and train you and get you on board.
And Omar?
If you'd like the number for the first worker-owned reuse center in the country, Rebuilder Source, it's 718-742-1111.
Omar, Melvin, Agnes, thanks so much for coming in. and Daily News columnist Era Lewis, thanks for making these matches. It looks like this is going to produce something beyond this show, with even these guests getting out of their policy silos. So thanks a lot for doing this and for joining us with it.
And thanks for bringing them all together.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC coming up in a minute. Former Boston University President John Silber on what he calls architecture of the absurd, including some here in New York. Stay with us. Mm-hmm.